Dr. Rock's radio show that was broadcast on Thursday the 16th of June unfortunately endured some technical difficulties as its various microphones refused to work or worked for a while and then stopped working. Unfortunately, Nick M, that's me, failed to notice that the various coloured lights on the computer screen were not flashing as they should be, so there were large chunks of silence. This programme featured Truth Juice Dave talking about the removal of his electricity and gas meters, and Litmus later on talking about his experience as a free man. And I'm adding this little post-production supplemental note to the podcast so that you can have the little introduction that was supposed to come before Dave's talk, because it is it's a long and complicated thing and deserves a little bit of a preamble, I think. The piece was recorded at the Truth Juice Summer Gathering this year, which means that, as is usual with my little podcasts and recordings, there's a fair amount of interesting background noise. So apologies for that, but you can hear Dave pretty much all the way through it. The loudest thing we get this time is a shower of rain. We were recording the thing late in the evening, so the steam train that's on some of the other recordings is not present. Dave pretty much tells his own story, although I'm really amazed at how upbeat and amusing the whole thing is, and he takes us from the beginning of the day when various people start turning up outside his gate with the intention of their initial intention is to bust the locks if they have to on the front door and to take the meters out of his house and replace them with prepayment meters, which will obviously be much more expensive to run than the ones that are being taken out. And he tells us the whole story more or less uninterrupted, and a very fine story it is. As the story gets going, and as we get to the most exciting bits, there's a little bit of medieval language which I've chosen to leave in rather than edit out. It's quite clear that I could have done if I needed to, but I feel that it's being appropriately used, and I'm sorry if anybody's offended by it. But it's only in a small part of the interview, and like I say, I think most people will appreciate it rather than deplore its use. Hopefully, the chat we're having will be taken in the spirit of, you know, a bunch of people sitting around shooting the breeze. Although some of it may sound like advice, I'm sure Dave would be the first to agree with me and say that really anything we decide to do should be based on our own knowledge and our own experience and our own findings, our own feelings, our own beingness. But hearing other people talk about ideas that may not be familiar, I think one of the things that we should be particularly aware of is when we have what I was talking about last week, a slide response to the information that's arriving, when we automatically, something inside us just resists taking it on board. It might be other ideas we've got that it's in conflict with. It might be something that happened to us a long time ago that just makes this idea unacceptable. But we should be aware of our own slide responses. One of the biggest sources of learning for me has been hearing unlikely pieces of information and thinking, well, goodness me, what would it be like if that were true? And then going and finding out. But really, anything that is said on even this talk or any of the rest of the Dr. Rock radio show contents should be regarded as a starting point, as, you know, a little nugget, a little shining thing that you might follow along and look into and see what it brings to you. And so this is really a very personal trip into Dave's section of the rabbit hole. It's very, very effective what he's doing, and it works in the end. Dave gets what he wants, so that's really great. Also, before I put the podcast back on track after this, you'll hear the thing as it turned out, complete with muffled microphones and dropped signals and all the rest. I'm sorry to have to interfere with it like this, but before we go on to that, I'd just like to pay tribute to Dave's warrior spirit for standing up and doing this work and then telling us the story so that we, the people, can hear how these things can sometimes go for us. Thanks, Dave. And thanks all for being patient for the technical problems. We shall try and ensure that we can work around them a little quicker next time. M for Dr. Rock's radio show. Still at the Truth Juice Summer Gathering 2011. And I've got Keith and Helen with us, and Mark still here as well. And tonight we've got the pleasure of Truth Juice Dave. He's with us because he's been having a great deal of fun at home with the authorities, with the people who supply his main services.
And we're hoping we're going to be able to, you know, we know he's not a man of many words. We think we might be able to coax a bit of stuff out of him, so. What were you doing before you came to the luxury of this field with heated teepees and running electricity and everything then, Dave?
Right.
The Acme Power Company.
Where shall we start with them? Well, I've come off the grid as far as the utility companies are concerned. I have now got an incoming telephone service only, which is probably gone by the time I get back, but it doesn't worry me, because I just want to unplug from this matrix. I don't like what they're doing to us. I don't like the way they're changing things like lights. They're giving us these power-saving lights. How long have we got, by the way?
We'll aim for sort of half, three-quarters of an hour, but I mean, you know, whatever, really. As long as we get down to see the intergalactic wizard at 10 o'clock, I'm fine.
Oh, right,
you know.
Okay.
In your own time.
Right. Okay, well, I went down that road, and the reasons for unplugging myself from this bloody matrix is a combination of things. Television, computer, I know the internet is great, but it's also bad for you as well, along with television. You lose sleep because of it. I know we do our research and everything, but you do lose a lot of sleep when you're doing your research, like everybody else who's done any serious research. It's took them literally months of sleepless nights. And
it's when we do it, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's when we
that's
do it.
Right, because it's the only time you can get your me time, isn't it? You know, the kids aren't running around, or you've got no visitors knocking on the door. So, I got all this information that we're all getting now, you know, which a lot of it is spoken of true juice here. We're having a great time, despite the bloody wind and rain.
Well, it was nice yesterday, though.
Oh, it was gorgeous yesterday. So, I decided, right, I'll try and accept the value. Been down that road, anyone?
I haven't actually, no. Can you explain what it means to me?
Well, accept the value. Apparently there's an account via the birth certificate bond, which is owned by somebody in the stock, or being sold or owned by the stock exchange.
Bought and sold on the stock exchange.
Yeah.
It's a tradable commodity.
Yeah. And this account is apparently you can access it to pay things like utility bills, living expenses, because they've taken all the wealth away, and they've taken everything from us. They've opened this account via the person, the birth certificate.
Is this what Rusty and Lockie meant earlier on when they said everything's paid for up front, our electricity and our gas?
Yeah, I think, well, I wasn't there at the time, but
right.
So I'm led to believe.
Yeah.
You know, via Credited and Commerce, which that's not the path I'm going down, but throughout the last 3 years, it's one of the things I've looked at. So anyway, accept for value, all you basically do is stamp on it, accept for value, by drawing, put your name, your date, the date, and your national insurance number, and you sign it in blue pen or red pen, whichever, or purple pen is even better apparently. Did you know that the chairman of Ferrari signs everything with a blue, purple pen?
No.
It's a fact.
Interesting.
It's a fact, because
it's important.
These
are where we're talking about the colour of the pens, Rusty and Lumpy.
Well, yeah, because you've got things like boxes and, you know, boxes that you sign in, you get you to sign in boxes,
right.
And in black pen.
They said that everything outside the box is completely irrelevant.
That's right.
Only the contents of the box.
That's right.
The rest of the form's
just four corner. It's the four corner rule, isn't it?
Yeah,
and they always get you to sign in black.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I then wrote to them, they carried on, I mean, I sent three or four acceptable values, and he kept on demanding these bills, and these bills were rising, and then I started thinking about electricity, the energy itself. And I thought, this thing can't be good for me. It can't be good. In the garden, my garden, at the narrowest point, it's 20 foot. And in next door's garden, there's a substation. And it's always interfered with the radio and the television. There's always been a blue spot on the corner of the television. And years ago, I'd gone on to them and said, you know, to the BBC via the radio, whatever it is, whichever body it was. And they come with tests and everything. No, it's fine, but this blue spot, it's like an orb. Yeah. It's still there. You know, it's not there now because there's no telly. But if you get electricity and plug it in, it's there in the corner of the picture. Hasn't gone away. If you move the telly somewhere else, it's okay, but where it is.
Right.
And it interferes with radio signals as well. And I've got, as I say, a substation, and all my family, my mum, dad, next door's mum and dad, next door that way's mum and dad from when I was a kid, over the back of me, there's about, let's think now, maybe 16 people, adults, who are around the 70s, between 70 and 80, who've all died of cancer, because there was a pylon in the garden. Right? They've all died of cancer. Every one of them. All around the same time. Mm. You know, they all moved in at the same time.
Yeah.
They lived a period of time. And they all died of cancer. Different types of cancer. Lung cancer, brain cancer, pancreatic cancer between me and mom. Blah, blah, blah.
Different proclivities of individuals, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm. And it started me thinking about electricity and looking at electricity, and this bloody stuff is bad for you. And then they come along with these energy saver lights, and they give you them in packs, they send you free. They send these things free to you. Hang on. With the knowledge that we've got, you think, you don't get buggered all free off the government. There's got to, there's...
Your healthcare, mate.
Your healthcare, man, yeah. yeah.
The Acme Cancer Research Centre.
Come to us and we'll give you cancer.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, any ladies out there, by the way, I just want to mention this quickly. If you're thinking of getting a mammogram, don't. It's equivalent to having 1,800 x-rays per breast. I just want to throw that one in.
Rhiann was mentioning that just before I came down. Yeah. She was saying she'd been reading about it herself and said that they quite clearly are going to be, again, like vaccines, a causative rather than a curative.
Yeah. So, we get down to the nitty-gritty, shall we?
Yeah, let's find out, yeah.
So,
tell us about the people that came to see you, Dave.
Right, so, back last November, they were taking no notice of these accepted for value, and I thought, if you think you're getting a penny off me, there's no chance, but you can't get anything anyway, because it's all debt. But, I said, right, that's it, you're not getting anything. I'm not paying you another penny. So, last November, I got a visit and a card through the door. Please ring this number as massive agency, read your electric gas account. Right, so.
You get it all from the same supplier then?
The Acme Power Company.
Right, so you haven't had to fight two lots of them off it. Very good.
I'm sure one or two of the people who are involved will be listening to this as well, I'm sure.
It'll be on a podcast, won't it? People will be listening to it for all time, mate.
Yeah, so, forgive me if I forget things, but a lot went on that day.
We've got the crowd here to try and keep us all online.
Forget, a lot went on that day. They were there for 3 hours, 50 minutes.
Yeah.
And two of the officers that were involved were there for another 20 minutes or so after that, having a chat about the free man movement. I was putting them right. Anyway, right. So, now, I'm trying to think exactly how the way things went. But back in November, I had a woman in the house called...
The lady from Acme.
Hello?
The lady from Acme.
If you're listening. And I give her a letter, handwritten, and I said, look, I don't want your services anymore. Any letters that you're going to send to me, please send to me, not the person. Right? Explain to her what a person was. Because anything sent to me person would be sent back. Return to sender, no contract. no international cheating, etc, etc. So I want you to take the meters out and end up any agreement or contract that you think you've got with me or my person is now terminated at this moment. And I give it to her and I said, by the way, you have 10 days, did I say 10 or 14? I think 14, sorry. You have 14 days to remove any of your property from my property, because if you don't, I will charge you £100 per item per week storage. Right? So
did you get a response?
Oh yeah, and she said, I will, and I said, oh, over the, I said, and any monies that you think, any debt that you think is outstanding, send an invoice to me, Dave of the Berlinger family, and I will attempt to discharge any debt. Don't send it to the person, because the person can't do anything. Right? So, that was that. And she said, I can get your meters taken out today. I said, no, it's not. It's inconvenient today. So, write to me. Not to me person. Write to me. Okay, I'll make sure that you do. Alright, and that was that. 2 days later, I got a letter to the person, so I sent it back. I didn't hear anything then. After Christmas, I got 3 letters to the person and sent them back. Then it all came to a head. I'm not sure what date it was, but it was a few days before. So it must have been the 14th, 15th, 16th of April, around there. I got a letter and I thought, so I'll open it and see what it says. Because I haven't heard from them for months. No, it wasn't. It was a phone call. That's right, sorry. It wasn't a letter. It was a phone call. I was outside Truth Juice at that night in Corwin. And anyway, got back. And it's 1471 or, you know. And, hello, it's such and such.
The Acme Power Company.
Just making you aware that we were making a visit to your premises with a warrant on the 20th of April to install prepaid meters. I thought, you cheeky swines. Let's see what happens here. Let's have a laugh. So, I was looking forward to it, actually. I thought, right, okay, warrant my arse. So, anyway,
do you think the warrant's likely to be legitimate?
Well, I did ask on 5 occasions for it to be documented and validated with a signed affidavit from the person or human being that wrote it or signed it. I asked for it. That was in blue pen as well, interestingly. Yeah, it wasn't in black pen, the signed warrant. It was blue. It certainly looked like a woman, but the guy wouldn't give me a copy of it when he turned up, but that's by the by, because I request some help from anybody out there regarding that, and I'll talk about that later.
Yeah.
I was up, ready and waiting, and I'd printed off a number of letters, notices of implied access revoked, removed, blah, 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 as you do, and with a threat of a commercial lien for anybody who was involved, instigated, or actually was involved within any damage, harm to me or my property without my consent.
And can you just describe what a commercial lien is for people that are not?
Well, I don't know a lot about it, but from what I've heard from Veronica Chapman, who done a talk at Truth Juice Liverpool a few weeks before this event occurred. A commercial lien, if anybody does any harm to you, it's in common law, by the way, it's not in this legal system. If anybody does harm to you, you write out a statement of truth about what they've done. So if their dog is shitting on your front doorstep, right, and you ask them to stop it, and they don't, the dog shit, well, you can say, right, okay, and you write down a statement of truth. Everything's got to be truth. And they send it to them, and they have 30 days to rebut it. If they don't rebut it, it becomes the truth and law, and your redemption is a commercial lien against them, and you can pick whatever amount you want. If you think they're worth 10 million, stick one on them for 15 million. Right? It'll soon teach them not to harm you again. And it's, with it being in common law, no judge can touch it.
And what form does this this challenge take? What would it look like on a piece of paper?
Well, that's what I was about to come to before. I need assistance with that, because a couple of the people that were involved in this, I want to go out and get a commercial lien. And one of the first people is obviously the person who signed the warrant.
Yeah. Peter's here, who I was talking to last night, and he was saying himself that commercial liens are, because there's no remedy in statute law, the remedy that we're seeking is the commercial lien, and that's exactly what he's doing, so he'd be worth talking to.
Well, I'll just come up with this one before I forget. I was also talking to somebody else a few days ago about this commercial lien, and they've got one going, and I won't say any of the circumstances, but they went to a solicitor, and the solicitor said, yeah, I can win that case for you, it'll cost you 15 grand. And they said, well, what do you think about a commercial lien? And the solicitor went, I've heard they're very good. That was from the solicitor.
Yeah.
So, I don't know the fools in and out of it. All I've learned about it is what Veronica Chapman did in a presentation at Liverpool, which is on YouTube, by the way. So anybody who can help me with that, I would much appreciate it, because when we can stop these district judges, who are basically just flaming solicitors, signing these warrants outside of their oath of office, we'll soon put a stop to them, because we want to put the shits up them where they won't sign them. And if they're not signed, no police officer will back it up. But I want to say thanks to the four officers at Merseyside Police.
Policemen 1 and 2.
I don't know who his younger assistant was. Can't remember her name.
Policeman number 3. And policeman number 4.
And it's not my intention to take the piss out of any of the people that were involved in this before I go into it. But at the time, I was so much under pressure, and I thought, I'm going to try and have a laugh with this rather than it get to me in an angry way. So
it keeps you peaceful.
I wanted it to be peaceful, but it might seem that I'm trying to have a laugh against the human beings that were there involved in it. No, that's not the intent. That's not the intention. I'm not taking a piss out of anybody. But this is the story anyway, let's get on to it. So they turned up at 8 o'clock, or the
Acme Power Company.
Agent called
Acme's man on the ground.
And he did give me his number, his an employee number, but wouldn't give me his surname. And I suitably had a number of notices of implied access removed, along with this commercial lien, should anybody damage or harm me or any of my property that day, or even enter onto the premises, or enter onto the actual garden, let alone. So, anyway, this
Acme's man on the ground
turned up in his little white,
the Acme Power Company.
And, I thought, right, well, I'm not waiting for him to knock. I'm going to go out. I said, all right, mate, have you come to do it? He said, yeah, come to replace your meter with prepaid. I said, well, that ain't going to happen, mate. And he said, oh, yes, it is, I've got a one. He said, before you go any further, let me give you this. So, which is the notice of implied access removed and the threat of a commercial lien should any harm come to me on my property. And he said, what's this? I said, well, you need to read it and understand it. I said, because if you don't, you could do yourself a great deal of harm. And he said, oh, yeah, I'll leave it in a minute. I said, no, please read it now. Don't read it in a minute. It's important that you do read it and understand it. I said, because if there's anything you don't understand in it, please ask me and I'll explain it to you. Yeah. I said, look, you seem to be a nice fella. I said, you want to raise your level of consciousness and get out of that job, because you are putting misery around families every day of the week by putting these bloody meters in. I said, that...
The Acme Power Company.
Charge a fortune for, right? And you've got little men like you running around, causing all sorts of hassle for people. People who don't pay electricity bills can't afford to bloody pay them. So how can they afford to pay for electricity two or three times as much? So that means that if you put this meter in a house with three kids, right, and the mother hasn't got any money, right, she's got a choice to make. Is it food or is it electricity? What do you do? Oh, well, it's not my problem. I said, look, raise your level of awareness and consciousness. Just tell them to stick the job up their ass. Seriously, I said, because, you know, anyway, just as I was saying that, another van appeared. No, it wasn't, it was a car. A silver Aston, I think it was. I said, are these with you? He said, yeah, they're the locksmiths. Oh, I said, right, okay, I've got a piece of paper with them as well. So I walked over. I can't remember the lad's names, it was two. And he said, I said, have you come here? He said, yeah, we're going to have to burst your locks if you don't let us in. I said, I wouldn't do that if I were you. I said, nothing's going to happen here today. He said, well, I said, well, look, just before you go any further, I want you to read that. Again, I give him a copy of this notice and applied access revoked, removed. Anyway, he looked at it and went, is this common law? I said, yeah. He said, do you know Mason Clare? I said, yeah. Do you? I said, yeah. All right. He's fucking hell. Do you know this person? Yeah. Yeah.
So you actually found somebody who's heard about us.
Yeah. So he said, well, who are you? I said, well, I'm Dave Tutu's Liverpool. Oh, yeah. I've heard about you. Blah, blah, blah. Have you heard of Veronica? Yeah, she was staying at my house last week. Blah, blah. We had her on the Liverpool a week or two before that. Oh, bloody hell, blah. You know, and he got up to his car, and he said, great, this. And he walked over to this guy, you know, who at this time was thinking it was a load of toff, and said, he said, whatever you do, don't walk on the land. Don't go near it. He said, ah, the man knows his onions, don't do it. And he looked at it, he went, well, what's going on here now? You know, what's this all about? And I said, read what I'm giving you, read it. And he said, well, what is it? So then I explained to him what the commercial lien was, right, and how he would go for everything he had himself. I said, because you are the man that's doing it. It's not
the Acme Power Company
doing it, it's you.
The Acme Power Company
can't do anything to anyone. It's only men and women that can do things to men and women.
Under the common law, you can have at absolutely everybody who's having at you, can't you? Every single one of them.
Yeah. You can't have a go at...
The Acme Power Company.
Because...
The Acme Power Company.
Don't do anything.
No, like your person.
How can a piece of paper do anything to anyone? Can't.
No.
Those pieces of paper and the chairman of the boards, whoever they are, whoever the...
Acme Power Company.
Chairman, I'll come after you if I can. You can't come after me because I don't use your service anymore. You go after them as a man in common law because they're the ones who are actually committing the act. Alright? So, anyway, then who turns up? The guy from the National Grid. Alright? I can't remember your name, Mason. I remember your name. Anyway. He turned up and blah, blah, and I said, hey, mate, have a go with that. And by this time, I'm talking to the other two locksmiths, and we started to have a laugh about this, you know. Anyway, he's on the phone to his manager, National Grid guy, there you go. And I said, then if you're paying income tax, stop it. Tell your employer to stop taking income tax out here. Volunteer, come out of the PAYE system and say to them, I'll pay at the end of the year myself. Because PAYE is voluntary, everyone out there. All you do is say to your employer, stop taking tax out of my wages, I will sort my own affairs out at the end of the year. And if you don't believe me, go back into the tax law books and have a look, because there was a massive crusade by the government in the 60s and early 70s, basically begging everybody to go pay as you earn. Because if you take it at source, you've got it.
Easy to administer.
Right. Absolutely.
And they're now making a move on. I've heard them talking about the idea of actually letting the revenue have all of the money.
Yeah.
And they pay the people.
That's right.
Can you imagine? They are talking about that.
Yeah. Well, it's all
the next step. It's the next step in the same thing. And
it's all
voluntary. Totalitarian.
Well. Totalitarian. Anyway.
Yeah.
Bloody swat. Anyway, Cabbage Patch Kid there. Well, Cabbage Patch is probably talking about Mr. What's his name? This. How have they got the nerve to call themselves prime ministers? How the hell? Who voted for them?
Not many people.
No.
But nobody voted for them. They've just took over.
Yeah.
It's just like bloody Saddam Hussein taking over in Iraq or Robert Mugabe taking over in this country.
Yeah.
It's a military coup, isn't it?
It is a coup.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and they've got their own military backing them, which is obviously the police force, amongst others. But anyway, where was I? So he's on the phone to his gaffer then, because he doesn't know what to do. And I heard the boss saying to him, just get the thing done. So, I don't know, half an hour, 3/4 of an hour gone by this time, you know. So, anyway, he got a phone call then. Put him on the phone for me.
And the lady from the legal department.
In my personal opinion, you ought to raise the whole level of consciousness as well and realise what you're doing to families. God, dear, oh dear. So she came on the phone, she said, "Can I take this?" And I said, "No." I said, "It's Dave," or I'm commonly known as Dave. I said, "It's the Knight Lockton family." Edit the word, I think it was.
I'll do that, yeah.
I said, "Yeah, who are you?" She said, "I'm
the head of the legal department at the Acme Power Company."
I said, "Oh, good." I said, "Right, there's no way you are coming across my home here today." I said, "This warrant that you've got, I've already asked
Acme's man on the ground.
I want it documented and validated by a signed affidavit by the person or entity or being that signed it to say that they were acting within their oath of office at the time of signature. Otherwise, it ain't worth the toss. It ain't worth the paper it's written on." And she said, "Of course it's coach." I said, "No, I'm not asking you to make a legal determination here. I am asking you to get a signed affidavit off the person that has written it and signed it." "But of course," I said, "anyway, forget that. I'm not going to repeat myself, but have you heard of a commercial lien?" And she said, "No." I said, "Right, I'm talking to the wrong woman."
Did you say she's head of that legal department?
Yeah, I said, "You're head of the legal department and you do not know what a commercial lien is." I said, "Well, let's put it this way. If there's any harm done to me, my property, I will be coming after you as well with a commercial lien. So if you don't know what one is, I suppose you get in touch with your barristers and find out. I have nothing else I want to say to you now. Goodbye. I'll hand you back to your agent." Bang. I'll just give it back to
Acme's man on the ground.
Then there was, you know, a can of Coke and all this. Made a cup of tea and a can of Coke. And all this. Yeah, a drink of cola for those who wanted it. anyway, the phone went again and we're having a laugh about things, you know. But this time, because they're all friendly and, you know.
Nothing's actually happening on
nothing,
the ground.
No, nothing's happened apart from...
You've got the bed.
I've got
Acme's man on the ground.
Not knowing what to do. Because he realises that if he does anything out of the ordinary, then he's going to get a commercial lien on him. Along, I'm talking to the locksmiths and said, "Now you know all this, now you can see what's going on, are you going to burst my locks. And the guy says, no way. I said, well, thank you very much. That's all I want to hear. Yeah. Right. I said, because...
Who's next?
I said, all I want here is these meters taken out. I don't want bloody prepayment meters put in. I want them taken out, full stop. That's it. Get them out. And I've been asking since November for that. So, anyway, it says on the warrant. Well, I said, I know what it says on the warrant. He said, but you can't force me into a contract. You can't force those meters into. How can you? How can you force that onto me? Well, how can your company that you work for force me to have this? It's like me going into Burger King, right? And a flaming guy stopping me from going in there. Say, you got to beat your beef burgers at McDonald's. It's like the same thing, isn't it? Yeah. Like, nobody can force you into a contract, just like your council tax. They're swines, aren't they? They're forcing everybody into a contract. Which, I mean, a contract that is uses coercion is illegal.
Yeah.
That's part, I think it's called a torturing contract, isn't it? It's a wrong. But that's coercion, and you cannot use coercion in a contract by the threat of, we'll send the boys around. Their corporate army policy enforcers. Anyway, so that was that, and he finished on the phone. Said, right, what's happening now? Oh, the police are coming. I said, great. So I said, well, what's going to happen now, lads? He said, if when they turn up, he said, I'm going to go through the back door, through the back gate, lock the back gate, go in the back door, lock the back door, and I'm going to sit in the house and see what happens. So, anyway, Merseyside police come, knocked on the door. No, I said, no, he doesn't live here. Who is he? Merseyside police. I said, well, it's not me, you know, it's in that way. He said, well, who is it? I said, it's Dave. He said, okay, Dave, can you open the door? I said, am I obliged to open the door? He said, can you just open the door, please? I said, am I obliged to open the door? He said, we just want to speak to you. I said, what about? He said, you've got a warrant here to enter the premises and replace your meters with prepaid. I said, right, I'm asking for the third time now. I want that warrant documented and validated by the person that signed it with a signed affidavit saying that they were acting within their oath of office at the time of signing. He said, of course they were. I said, I know you don't know the law. I said, you're a policeman. I said, before we go any further, let me give you this. So I give him a notice of intent. Yeah. And I said, here's another piece of paper for you. And I passed it through. I said, can you shove the letterbox open, please? Because I can't pull it this side. He said, yeah, okay. And I said, please read that. I did. Yeah, it's my oath of office. I said, great. Now, are you standing on your oath of office at this time? He said, yes. I said, good. Tell them to fuck off. He said, I can't do that. I said, why? I said, it says on your oath of office that you protect the people and keep the peace. I am a people and I'm sitting in my home acting peacefully. And they are breaching the fucking peace. There's fucking three vans and God knows how many people out there all ready to attack me. All the neighbours are out there looking, seeing what's going on. Because you've got the curtain switches and all the rest of it. I'll mention no names, but I've seen you there anyway. just in case they're listening as well. We all know who they are, don't we, folks? Anyway, yeah. So I said, they're causing a breach of the peace. Go and tell them to fuck off or arrest them. And he said, no, they've got a warrant. I said, oh, God, why do I have to keep saying this about this warrant? I want it documented and validated. And he said, of course, they've got the authority. I said, I'm not asking you to make a legal determination. You are supposed to be impartial. I said, that is up to a court of law to make a legal determination, not you. Your job is to keep the peace and to protect the people, not protect companies or persons? Does it say protect persons like...
The Acme Power Company.
No, it says protect the people, and I am a people. Will you open the door, please? No. I said, I'll tell you what I will do. I'll come round to the side gate. Right. Oh, do you know, if this guy listens to this, he'll come round to my house and knock me out. So, went round to the side. But you've got a warrant. Now, my gate, it's got an arch wood thing. It's made of wood, it's got an arch. A Masonic arch with the Jacob and Baal at the end. And there's a gap in there. I mean, the new gates has got a gap because I made these things myself for the boat to get the boat in and out. And they're not. I mean, I'm not a carpenter like other people who may be listening. No names, no pack till there. So I knocked them together myself, and there's a gap, right? Now, if I move to the right of the gate, that gap, you can see me. If I move to the centre of the gate, you can't see me.
Are you going through the little plastic one?
So I stood directly behind the gate. And he's got to listen, man. It's him. Said, no, it's Dave. And he said, okay, Dave. And he started jumping up and down so he could see over the top. And I'm going, I'm like that, trying not to laugh. And all I needed to do was move to the side. And I thought, no, I'll let him jump up and down a couple more times. Well, he's a public employee. I am not don't take this person. So I said, look, I'm a peaceful man. I live with inside common law. Their legal world, I'm not a part of it. I've been asking them since November to take these meters away, and they won't do it. He said, what are you going to do without electricity? I said, that's my problem. That's nothing to do with you. I said, I want those meters taken out. And then this is nothing to do with you, I'm telling you. But they won't just take my meters away. They want to take the quarterly payment meters in and put these prepayment meters in and force me into paying. Now, I know there's those out there that would say, if you're not going to use the power anyway, you're not going to pay for it. But the temptation's there. The temptation's there, you know, because we all like our computers and our little toys, and I love music. And I've got a guitar, and I can't play the bloody thing, but I like to pick it up now and again. And of course, it's when you come in from the pub, the first thing you do is switch your light on, you know, so that, and it's habit. I actually got out the habit now of pulling, you know, when I go for a pee, first thing you do is put the light on. Got out the habit, it's gone now. And I don't go to the light switch as soon as you go in when it's dark. Anyway, so then the next thing is, he said, oh, hang on a sec, well, come on, hold on a second. He walks away. I see it on his radio, so he's got back to base, I think. Zed Victor 1 and all that. And he said, well, I don't know what to do. He said, the boss is coming now. Okay. I started talking about the female movement to this guy. He was a nice fella.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry about taking the piss out of you there, jumping up and down. But I just wanted to prove to myself that standing in common law, we're not doing any harm to anybody. And we've got the power that we have if we decide to stand up for our own rights, our own laws, and not take any crap anyway. So his boss come, sergeant,
policeman number 3,
I think his name was. Yeah. By this time I'm sitting in the garden.
Yeah.
Right, having a whiskey.
The other guys are still out the front.
Oh, they're outside. No, they won't come over the flaming threshold, will they? So this guy come up and blah, and he said, what's all right? I said, look, before we go any further, how are you standing in common? Are you standing on your oath of office? He said, absolutely. I said, good. I said, well, I've got people out there. Oh, it's got to take you back a bit. Sorry, forgot to mention this. So
policemen one and two,
when he was at the front door, says, I said, they're breaching the peace. And he said, well, no, you're breaching the peace by not answering the door. And I said, hey?
There was shock on the faces of everybody in the room at that point.
I said, hi.
Peace by not answering the door.
Yeah, I said, I'm sitting in my own house and I'm breaching the peace. How can I do that? I said, I'm not saying anything, I'm not doing anything, but I've got four people who want to kick the door in, and you're telling me I'm breaching the peace. How the bloody hell do you work that out? Think about what you just said for a minute. Well, technically, I said, oh. So therefore,
the Acme Power Company.
Are those people out there who are aged...
The Acme Power Company.
Aren't breaching the peace by kicking my door in with an unauthorised, unlawful warrant. Said, no, think about what you're saying and doing then. And he said, well, can you just open the door? I said, no, I'm not opening the door. He said, I promise I will not. That's right. I said, you'll only burst in and help them. He said, no, I promise. I said, I also know that you are allowed to lie within the course of your duties. And I said, no, I'm not opening the doors yet. So anyway,
policeman number three
turns up. And same thing, are you on the oath of office? Yeah, absolutely. I said, great. Well, those people over there want to kick me door in, put a meter in, take my old meter out, put a new one in, which is going to cost me a lot more. I don't want it. I've got no contract with them. I haven't had a contract with them ever, actually. I have never had a contract with them. A person with a name very similar to mine may have had a contract with them, but I have never had a contract with them. And yet, they're trying to force me, blah, blah. And I said, no, I'm not having it. So I want you to tell them to go away. Oh, anyway, another guy turns up then.
Another police.
It's another police. And I said, look, before we go, are you on your own? Absolutely, and so are my constables. I said, right, can you sort it out? Because they're not coming and putting these bloody pee-painting meters in, full stop. That's it. I am not opening the door to them. I am a peaceful man standing in common law, and you have told me that you and your officers are going to stand in common law and uphold the law and do your job. So please do it and get them away. Okay, don't worry, Dave. He disappears. The other guy disappears, which leaves me with the two constables. And anyway, then
policemen one and two
comes back. He said, Will you let them take the meters out then? I said, yeah. Oh, I forgot anything at the start. Yeah. At the start, when it all first started,
Acme's man on the ground
says, we can't take your meters out and leave you or not. And I said, why? He said, because it's out of our powers to do that. It's against our regulations. Right, it's far beyond our...
because all the electricity had run out of the tubes.
Well, that's probably, yeah. I don't know whether it's due down to human rights, my arse. I don't know whether it's down to the Human Rights Act or the EECA directives or whatever the case may be, but apparently you can't leave, since he told me that, apparently you can't leave anybody without a way of heating water. You have to have hot water and a way of heating as well. I have no way of heating in the house right now because my house hasn't got a chimney. I can't go out and buy coal. I can't go out and have a coal fire because there's no chimney there.
No.
It's one of these 1980s.
Gas flue, isn't it?
You can get a gas fire for them, right, but it has to be a balanced flue thing.
Yeah.
Right, and they cost about a grand now. Cheapest one, but I don't have gas either because he took away the gas meter. Thanks for that information. But we'll look into that. And if you have,
the Acme Power Company
have broken the law by leaving me without a meter, or a way of heating hot water, and it's against your regulations, I'll be coming out after.
The Acme Power Company.
For that one. Yeah, so, anyway, the...
Policemen 1 and 2.
Come here, he said, will you let them take the meters out? He said, absolutely. I don't want the bloody things. Take them out, I'm not interested. Great. Okay, hold on. Oh, back again. Okay, they've agreed to take the meters out. I said, fine. Why all this shit? Why all this crap when all you had to do in the first place was come and take them out? Now, I bet you... oh, by the way, I've had... and that's the end, and I spoke to... the two officers that first turned up for another 20 minutes, 25 minutes, and I said, well, we're going to need you boys on our side, because when the shit hits the fan, which we all know it's going to, we're going to need you boys to look after the peacefuls, and the peaceful people, amongst the peaceful people, are the free men movement. Yes. You won't get any hassle off us. If you do your job, if you do your job the way I have done today, right, you won't get any hassle off us. No. But if you do, if you don't do your job, you'll find yourself with commercial liens all over your bloody face.
So you've served a commercial lien then against everybody that you've...
No, not yet. I want assistance with...
With doing with, that, but you've done the implied, the removal of access.
Oh, the removal of implied access is done, I mean...
And I've presumably got, nobody's moving to validate your warrant as requested.
No, nobody has contacted. I've had three letters off Scottish Power since, and a car through the door wanting to check the meters. Which came a week later. But your meters haven't been checked for a long time. We've come to check them. That was a week after. What the hell's going on? I've had three letters to the person, so, which I've sent back.
So the first question that springs to my mind is, how do you think they actually stand in terms of either the statute law or the common law, having taken your meters away? And
well...
Left you without...
Right, okay. I don't know the actual law on this. I don't know the legalities on this. I have no idea what the regulations are. But I'm told by one of my neighbours who is a ex-gas fitter, he's retired now. I'm told by him that... And he's had all the training with National Grid and all this sort of stuff. And I think he's... he was registered to put gas meters in. Not many people can put gas meters in, by the way. All electricians can put lucky meters in, but gas meters, you've got to have a license. But I'm told by him they can't leave you. They can't leave a person without hot water,
and they
must have a way of heating hot water.
Yeah,
heating water. They have. Now, I told them to remove their meters as a man, not as a person.
Yeah.
Now, the person's their property, and they don't like you unplugging yourself. Now, I've done that. So, I need some assistance with that. I would like to make...
The Acme Power Company.
...suffer for what they've done to me, right, by giving me all this hassle, first of all, over that warrant, because it didn't need it, because I got exactly what I asked for in the first place.
Yeah, right? This is a fair point.
With a load of hassle,
yeah.
A number of police are at my door, a number of agents, other people will be highly embarrassed by it. Mm. If it was the ordinary man in the street, would be highly embarrassed by all those four people turning up, eight people turning up, and him fighting for his right to live. Because we're all entitled to live.
Yeah.
Now, what's going to happen in the winter when I've got no heat? That's a thing I'll have to overcome. But let me tell you this, I feel much better for not having electricity in the home at the present time. There are disadvantages, obviously.
So are you thinking of trying to carry it forward without electricity, or are you considering doing something like putting your own meter in?
I'm considering... I'm considering put my own meter in. I'm considering doing without, and I'm also considering solar energy. I do have 7 solar panels now ready for the likes of compute, but with a computer you've got to have formal lines and stuff. And with my experience today,
everything's changed, eh, Dave?
I've got to have a ponder on what the hell's happened today, because for all those people who listen out there, the energy in this field right now is absolutely amazing. Now, that's the type of light, that type of light that Mark's just put there, that's the type of light they're putting everywhere, isn't it?
Yeah. Full mercury.
And not only that, you can see it flickering away. And it'll give you a headache after a while.
Yeah, that's right. We've been stocking up on opalescent light bulbs, piling them up in the pantry. I really don't like these either.
I can't stay in that light much more than about 10 minutes.
No.
Any longer.
No.
I'm back used to using candlelight.
Well, I mean, I think you've done really well. You've told us your story. We've got we've got the wizard on later and things. So.
Yeah. Anyway,
I think that was pretty exciting myself, Dave. Thank you very much.
If this is going on TNS, can I just interrupt? If this is going on TNS, Steve, Kirsty, good luck with your ventures. Joe, Doc Clark, give us a shout, mate. I've lost your number and Steve's number. I've lost all the numbers because I sat on my phone with my big fat ass. and I lost all the numbers, so please send me a text.
Oh, this is
and let me know.
This is like technological shamanic death, isn't it? Yeah. He's got no TV, no cooking, no electricity, no gas, and he's sat on his one means of communication and wiped out all the numbers.
So
please send information to this poor man. Carrier pigeons can be bought from.
Yes, answers to the name of Lucky. I'm thinking of going selling charms on Blackpool Beach.
Well, all the possibilities are open to you now. I reckon you've let go of most of what you should need to let go of.
Yeah,
that's very good. And we'll keep up with you. We can't keep up with you on the Skype.
No, it'll have to be telephone for the time being.
Yeah, telephone whilst
the landline's still going, or it was. Before I come away, how long that's going to be on it? Because I don't want to give them the energy. And if we all do it, if everybody did this, everybody did this for 3 months, you would have free energy overnight.
Yes. Yeah.
Simple as that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel the same way about the banks. I don't know why, given the way they're ripping everybody off, why anybody's got a bank account, why everybody isn't trying to do something else, because I haven't had one for 15 years. And for me, I know how you're feeling today in the field, because for me, the moment when I didn't have to go into a bank anymore was a massive transformation. I didn't realise how much I hated going in there. I don't have to use hole-in-the-wall machines anymore. Mm. And I hated them as well. There's always that slightly nervous encounter with the damn things.
Yeah.
Same when I stopped walking into big supermarkets and stopped using them. All of these things, they change the way you feel inside, don't they? And then new stuff can start flowing through you.
Well, TV was one that does anybody watch TV?
Well, I think we're sort of dealing with it at the moment. We're sick of it and think about
just
paying a license for
don't pay a license.
It's unwatchable now, the shite that they're putting out.
Apart from that, the TV itself is bad for you. The programming with you,
especially with these low energy appliances, you know, these modern thin LED televisions, you know, they're giving off an awful lot of dirty electricity.
Light emitting diode, is that stand for?
But
they've got these
low energy, eco appliances. They're not good for you.
You know how television was invented? Do you know why it was in? It was a mistake. Television. It was a byproduct of something else. They were looking for a way to communicate with the spirit world.
I remember reading about it. Yeah, that's right. Because what they were doing was
on that spirit world DVD.
Yeah, that's right. I read about him 14 times. They were leaving on a steady signal to try and get interference on it.
Why do you think your telly's black?
Yeah.
Have a look. Do you know what? my mate's just bought himself one of these bloody plasma or whatever they are. Guess what? Who makes it? ISIS.
ISIS.
IS. IS. That's the manufacturer. ISIS.
ISIS plasma balls.
Mm. Yeah, it gets shut in the
gets more thing. Surreal by the day, does it not? So next time I come up to Truth Juice, then I better bring my own candles. Next time I come to Truth Juice, well, Liverpool. Well, how's it going, Dave? Was John the Liverpool?
We had a great night with Veronica Chapman. That's going back. Oh, crikey, that was an eight. Where are we now, aren't we?
Yeah,
she came bars in West Wales as well. She was brilliant.
Absolutely fantastic. Yeah. We had a good turnout. We've also had Phil and Rosa, homeopaths from Liverpool, talking about breast cancer. And as I said before, ladies, do not get a mammogram. Look, if you want to go on a site, just type in homeopathy, Phil Rosa, Liverpool, you'll get to the site. Anyway, next week, on June the 7th, we've got Anthony Peake.
What's he talking about?
He's going to be talking about, hopefully, consciousness, and he talks about heart, breathing, he's got a well-established website. Sold 33,000 books in 6 different languages, and he's coming to Liverpool. amazing.
Very good.
Meet these amazing people. Pub. And then shortly after that, I'm hoping to have Mark Foster sitting with me here. As I said, the Dickie Bird, he's shy.
Been having a good chuckle, Dave.
Ian Moore. Ian said he'd go. Yeah. Mike
the money man.
Yeah, Mike the money man.
Yeah, we've spoken to him as well.
So we've got the Truth Juice gatherers give me loads of contacts to talk future talks.
Yeah.
And those of you who haven't come, make sure you come next year because it's bloody amazing.
That's right. Fantastic. Truth Juice rising, folks. Truth Juice rising.
Yeah.
Yep.
Very good. Well, shall we head down to where everybody else is and see what they're getting up to?
Yeah, I need a ciggy, so...
thanks for that, Dave. That was absolutely brilliant.
There we go. I'm sorry if I've just seemed to be having a bit of difficulty with my microphone. I'm not sure whether people can hear what's coming out. If you could let me know in the chat box if you can hear me, that'd be great. In the meantime, I'm going to just play another tune and see what kind of feedback I get from that. You're back live with Dr. Rock's radio show on tnsradio.com. We've been earlier, as you will have noticed, listening to Truth Juice Dave running through the means by which he held the forces of the world management team at bay before they even managed to get through his garden gate, as far as we can gather. And it's worth noting that whether or not we or they or anybody, in fact, knows what a commercial lien actually is, the threat of one, when used by Truth Juice Dave, was enough to make sure that that he basically got his way. He stood his ground and gave us a fine and detailed account of what was what happened to him on that day. And I mean, really, it's absolutely full of material. And perhaps it's worth, because it all moved actually quite quickly, worth recapping some of the major points that were made. Right at the beginning, when he was trying to contest the fact that he himself, the person, Dave, was actually liable to pay the statements, the amounts that were being charged on the statements that were coming through the door of the house that he's making use of, he used a technique called accept for value, which basically assumes that you have a kind of bond which is set up at your birth at the same time as your birth certificate, and that everything that you consume during your life or everything that you make use of whilst you're alive on the earth can be paid for from this bond, and that if you know about it by the technique that he describes, you can apparently pay your bills out of this bond. That's obviously one whole layer of subject matter that's well worth looking into. The bond that comes about when you're born, the birth certificate, is a very, very interesting thing to look into, but it's it's strictly in the land of commerce and it involves a lot of detail, and it's all really interesting, and every single bit of information helps to kind of colour it in, and accept for value is one of them. We noticed though that pretty quickly Dave said they just weren't paying any attention to that, and I think that appears to be the case, as far as I can tell, with most of these first stage forays that we can have dealing with the man that's knocking on the door. I've personally had I've had experience of conditional agreement, which is where somebody's trying to get something off you.
Dr. Rock's radio show is experiencing one of a range of occasional technical anomalies and is currently unable to broadcast some or all of its intended output. Please be assured that our technical team has been roused, switches are being switched and connections checked. What passes for normal service will be resumed as soon as possible. We apologise for any inconvenience this may cause. Please do not adjust your sets.
There we go. Well, let's just try that. I've got another microphone here. It looks like this one's working a little bit better than the last one was. Just if you can say in the chat box whether you can hear me, that would be dead useful. I think the last microphone that I had was really a bit shot away by the scene, sounds of it. So what I'll do is I shall just play one more tune and see if anybody can hear that, and then we can crack on, hopefully. Here we go. Well, I'm hoping that that's going to lead to some volume control, that's noises coming out at you, and that looking good at the moment. I shall try not to move too suddenly, because it seems that if I do, it all goes dead. Just shout at me if I don't notice the lights going out. So I think I was talking about accept for value and conditional agreement and all the rest of it. I then went on to say, and I'm sorry if I'm repeating myself, but I can't be sure exactly what you heard. I went on to say that one of the first things that Dave did was he established with the lady from the company that he wanted the company to address him, the flesh and blood human being, not the person, not the straw man. And that's, of course, something that I don't think we have to go into in any detail here, because I'm quite optimistic. I'm made quite cheerful by the fact that many, many people now seem to realise that there is a difference between the person that is being billed and the flesh and blood human being that is absolutely experiencing the world. And one of the great places I've come across recently which sums this up just brilliantly, just all you have to do is spend 10 minutes of your time with it and you'll understand, is a YouTube thing that's been was recommended on a show that Vin did with Harry and Mr. T, and it's available on TNS Radio, more or less at the top of their page, and it's called Meet Your Straw Man, or Meet the Straw Man, and it's fantastic. It sums it up beautifully. Well worth 10 minutes of your time, and understandable even if you're sort of, you know, down to 5 or 6 years old, I'd say. Well worth propagating. So he was trying to make sure, Dave was saying, you know, write to me, that you need to write to the flesh and blood person, you need to write to Dave, as commonly known, because the other thing, the straw man is a legal fiction and it cannot do anything, and if you continue to write to the straw man, then I will send the letters back to you unopened, which is of course what he did. And that had about as much effect, honestly, as the accept for value or conditional agreement or return to sender, all these other things that we try to start with, do seem to be pretty much shrugged off by people who just want to say, nah, give me the money. So the next thing Dave had to do was sort himself out so that the people that were coming to talk to him understood that they had no right of access onto his land, or the land that he's occupying, the land that he's using at the moment. And he did that by serving everybody who turned up with a notice, which is a removal of implied right of access. And as far as I understand it, I think a lot of people seem to believe they've got a right of access to your land because they believe they've got a contract with you and they believe you owe them money, or they believe they have a warrant, or they have lots of reasons for believing why they should be on your land. And as far as I can gather, looking at some of the old jurisprudence books, your land is private land. They have no right to be there, and maybe with a valid warrant if it's valid, but it means that letting them know that is most important. And we came across this last week when we were talking about the badger cull that is being proposed for West Wales, a subject to which I shall return in the future. But if you remember, those listening will remember that there was there's a community there called Bristin Mire, and they were visited by people in balaclavas who are carrying identity cards but who refuse to take their balaclavas off to, you know, make the identity cards any use. And what they were trying to do was they were trying to look on private land for badgers sets, for information, for data, for any future cull. And I have no doubt at all that in many, many places they actually managed to just go onto the land, look for the sets and do what they wanted to do. But in the case of this place, people did basically effectively remove any implied right of access by being there, by putting up no trespass signs on their gates, private use only. And this made life very difficult, and eventually, well, we heard how, I think it was 40 policemen and a load of people in balaclavas, and I've no doubt several other hangers-on and administrators, were not able to get onto this land, despite their weight of numbers, to do what they'd gone there to do. And that was done by the removal of the implied right of access. So it's quite a powerful tool. To my knowledge, the notice is quite a simple one. There's templates available for it on the internet, although like all of these things, it's far better if you can learn about it and, you know, learn how to write it yourself, learn what the components are of it and what's actually going on, because that's much, much more helpful. But that's the first thing that Dave did. He said, write to me, not to my person, and then he removed any implied right of access to the visitors as they arrived. The man from the electricity company, from Acme Electricity Company, and then the two locksmiths. So, I think I was slightly incorrect when I said there's no remedy in statute law. There is a kind of remedy, and there are remedies in statute law, obviously. It's sort of what it's there for, I guess, if we're looking at it askance. But one of the more complex things that Dave was talking about was a commercial lien. And one of the reasons I think why he's concentrating on that is it's something that at the Truth Juice gathering was being talked about by several people. It was in different ways, because they're all doing things in their own terms. But the commercial lien is a very interesting document, because everyone can be subject to a commercial lien. It's a common law device, a common law object. I don't know what the proper word for it is. And one of the main things it's thought to be doing is breaking a belief in the corporate shield. It has tended to be the case up until recently that flesh and blood human beings were being turned over by corporations under administrative commercial law, and there was little awareness of what was going on and so little move to stop it, although I am aware that for 20 or 30 years at least people have been fighting this sort of battle. But what's really going on there is one of the really huge differences between the law, the common law in the UK, and the Roman law, or the law that rules, say, in Belgium or Switzerland or wherever, is this idea that when a man comes to your door and tries to impose things on you with menaces, then you have this ability, this lien, to enable you to prevent him from doing that, and to make sure that he cannot take advantage of you by going for you with menaces. And in the English common law, everybody who's involved in getting that man to your door to try to distrain your goods or to try to take away your meters and put in prepayment meters or whatever you like, then all of those people are also, in theory at least, I'm sure that it will be, I know that there are people testing it pretty thoroughly at the moment, they are all open to a lien. And then you notice that the word lien is in the word alien and inalienable, and that makes you wonder whether it really is one of the core things that we've got. And as I say, Dave obviously knew, he possibly knew enough, he didn't feel he knew enough to actually serve the liens at the time, but he was going to learn about that in the over a period, and I know he knows more about it now. But in effect, as it happened, just being able to talk about them was actually enough in this particular case. And the thing about the lien is it happens in the civil jurisdiction. It doesn't need to go before a judge. I could be wrong. Feel free to correct me, but I think there's an element of having to nail it to the church door or something. I think it's got to be publicly advertised in order to be publicly enforceable. But anyway, it seems to be a pretty effective implement, and at some stage I'd really like to get some of the people I know who are actually running these things through the courts and seeing how they work. I'd like to get them onto Dr. Rock's radio show so that we can all benefit from maybe a little bit of information on what these things are, what they look like, how it is you do them. I think that broadly speaking they're a standard affidavit, though, where you, like as Dave summed up, you You tell the truth. If somebody is doing you a wrong or causing you harm or causing you loss, you write down the truth about what has happened and you send it to them and you give them 30 days to rebut whatever it is that you think they've done. And then in reasonableness, you probably give them another 15 days after that. But after that, it's deemed to be, you know, not approachable, really. It can then only be, expired or offset if it's challenged, discharged by the person taking it out, or if there's an apology or a decision by a jury that it's no longer a valid document. So that's all quite interesting, the commercial lien, certainly worth a bit more look into that. Then we had the business as well. He touched very briefly on the business of men and women being treated as corporations and the fact that corporations can't do anything. They are simply pieces of paper, or in the case of this story, the sound of a name that was coming through all of your speakers. It has no mind. It cannot charge you with anything or talk to you, or really it is a fiction. It's a fictional piece, no more really than a chess piece. And the idea with the straw man is that you are a similar kind of personal corporation, if you like, a little similar chess piece. And if you go and step into your little chess piece and get onto the board, then almost anything can be done to you, it would seem, until you choose to leave the board, resign. So that was an interesting point. And then, of course, he touched briefly on income tax. He suggested to the locksmiths that they should apply to their employers on the basis that pay as you earn is entirely voluntary, and get control of their tax, get the money back from the full amount of money off of their employer, and then arrange to deal with the taxman as they see fit at the end of each year. Now that's quite a coincidence, really, because the program I was mentioning earlier with Harry and Vin and Mr. T also deals a fair bit with income tax and is worth listening to on that basis, because of course we haven't always had income tax. I think that income tax maybe started around the Napoleonic Wars, when we needed to get at Napoleon. Before that, people were taxed, but it was occasionally, and when your king or whatever you wanted to go to war, then he'd raise money or whatever he could out of people to pay for the war. But the income tax is fairly new. It seems it might only have seriously sort of come about in the mid-60s, and yet we've all kind of just taken it on board. We all kind of pay it. I know that Litmus, who will be listening to a little bit of a tape of Litmus later, and Litmus actually applied to the tax people through the Freedom of Information Act, and he lent on them until they did document for him all of the tax that he'd paid in the time that he was working in industry, and all of the tax that he'd paid, really. And apparently it was a really fierce pile of paper. He did say, it does seem, looking at his log and talking to him, that was one of the more difficult stunts that Litmus pulled. The tax office will try to tell you, I'm absolutely sure, that they only keep records for 6 years or 7 years or all that kind of thing. But apparently in the long run, and like I say, it did take a bit of effort, he did find out exactly how much he'd paid. And like I say, there's more about income tax on Vin and Harry's podcast. Absolutely great. Then we get to the business of the warrant. I said last week that there is a kind of, in law, even if you have no hedges or fences around your land, there is effectively, or around the land you're living on or being in, there is effectively in law an invisible barrier that can be sort of reinforced with a no trespass sign. One of the other things that's really common is to ask people to document and validate what it is they're asking you to do, or document and verify the obligation that you're being put under. And the warrant, quite often, in fact, if not nearly always, I think the warrants that are being produced are not necessarily being signed by people who are standing under their oath of office at the time. And strictly speaking, the right to sign is only kind of given, if you like, it's only taken on with the oath. So it should really not be possible to sign and not be under your oath. And this is why Dave goes back and back again to oaths of office. It's something that, well, certainly you could see that it kind of, here, that it kind of worked as well. So he was asking there that the that the warrant itself be validated, that he be given a signed affidavit to the effect that the warrant was signed by a person that was acting under their oath of office, and their oath of office would be to protect and serve. Because as soon as you look really closely at this sort of thing, the very act of signing the warrant is failing to protect the peace of Dave. And that again is a bit of an infinity loop when you think about it. It's all a bit of a catch-22, and that's why the warrant is a thing that's worth, or the validation is a thing that's worth concentrating on, and why Dave asked for it so much and so often. And also, you know, clearly I shouldn't think for a moment that anybody actually has validated the warrant as requested. And we've got to remember that all of this stuff is only imposed on us with our consent. So if there are reasons why we should not give our consent, we should be asking about those reasons. And, you know, playing a bit of tennis, throwing the ball back into their court. Verify. Document and verify the obligation. Another really important thing, I think, and this is really difficult. It's for so many of us, it's our nature to open our door to people. I know it is round here, maybe it's different in other places, but we see many people, and certainly up until the recent past, everybody that came to the door was kind of like friendly and cooperative and wanted to do things of which we thoroughly approved. Over time, that has most definitely ceased to be the case. And once again, it's been for us it was a bit of a slow realisation, because for years, probably never actually, I'm not sure that I've ever owned a television to be licensed to my name. And I know it's true of my housemate and helpmate as well, that she has never had a television either. And yet for 14 or 15 years we have been we have been encouraged by the TV licensing people to get a TV license. And on one occasion I did actually fill in the form. Previously we'd just done what is a thoroughly recommended course of action, because it got nothing to do with you, especially with no TV. But even if you have TV, it's not really got much to you. So we just used to throw them away. But as soon as I signed one and sent it back, as soon as I signed on the dotted line, we had two guys turn up at 7 o'clock in the evening and present themselves at the back door, requiring us to prove that we didn't have a television. And I pointed out to them that they did not have a statutory right to my home, and they suggested that they could come with a policeman and a warrant and what have you, which is of course a perfectly welcome idea, even those days before I found out about all of the freedom stuff. But in the end, we kind of let them into the house just so that they could be satisfied. I'm sure that would not happen now. The door would not even be open to them. But what was really funny, what really made me laugh, was I said, "Oh look, I'll just go and tidy up upstairs." Because upstairs was where our sitting room was, for various reasons. And they said, "Oh, we can't go upstairs." So it meant they'd gone to all of this trouble of writing us all these letters and everything and for us to throw away. And then we finally filled one in. They sent the two boys round to have a look to prove that we've got a telly. But they can't go upstairs, which is where the telly would have been. And I thought that was just, you know, you've got to laugh. It was worth, I'll be honest, it was worth letting them in. It was worth letting them in just for that moment, really, because we probably wouldn't have found that out if we kept them outside. But to go back to the door thing, it's really important not to open the door. It's like this is what the tales of witches and vampires are all about. You've got to invite them over the threshold, and opening a door can do that to them. So some people it's best to deal with from the side of a closed door. And Dave obviously knew the difference between one set of people and the other. You'll notice he decided not to wait for a knock on the door from the man who turned up from the Acme Power Company, who decided to go out and, you know, basically give him his papers and explain to him that he needed to read them. And whilst he was out there, the locksmiths turned up, so he had to go with the locksmiths as well. And he dealt with all of those people face to face, because they're men, they're not in uniform, they're kind of doing their job. And there's always a chance that, like with his electricians, I thought it was fantastic the way they'd actually obviously heard a fair bit about what was going on and were pretty keen to see it in operation. We can hope that we're going to see more and more of that. But that, of course, is the reason for dealing face to face with these people, and, you know, lots of others. The thing is that there's a certain brand of people, and Dave obviously, for his own reasons, and I think they're pretty sound, includes the police in the sort of people that should be dealt with from the other side of a closed door. Because if you choose to open the door for a policeman, the whole situation changes. I believe the same thing is true of bailiffs. So from a given point, Dave went inside, shut all the doors, and then did another major, major thing, which is really, really useful to all of us, which is when the policeman asked him to open the door, he said, "Am I obliged to open the door?" And the policeman, as they normally do, simply repeated the question, "Will you open the door?" Once again, he was insisting with the policeman that he wasn't Mr. Burr, that he was actually Dave, as commonly known, and he did that all the way through. At no stage did he let anybody refer to him as by the name of the straw man, which has been erroneously associated with him. He was attending to all of the detail on that. At no stage was he saying yes or no to people. You notice he said to the policeman, he said, "Am I obliged to open the door?" Another one that's commonly used is that a request or an order? Because again, nearly always all you'll get is another request. If, of course, it turns out to be an order, then it's chargeable, and that's a whole new story. You can actually get money from them for opening the doors. Mally was kindly pointing out on the chat box earlier on. So that's all interesting stuff, but he did that with the police, and because he was not letting the police open the door, and they would, I think we can be pretty sure that they were not, they were only there to keep the peace as long as they couldn't get into the house. If they'd got into the house, there's every chance, at least evens, that they would have helped the people who were in there to put these prepayment meters in. Anyway, he kept policemen's one and two successfully at bay, and so they had to get their boss, understandably, and the boss pretty soon, having heard what Dave had to say, had to call his boss, so that's why we got policeman number four in. And that, of course, was nearly entirely down to the "am I obliged to open the door?" And, of course, quite clearly you're not. Also, I think it might be fair to point out that if they had a genuine warrant, there's again at least an evens chance that they'd be coming through the door rather than knocking on it. Although I don't really know too much about these things. I'm learning as I go along. First-hand experience. I was quite interested by Dave's comment about the boat. He does, of course, live in Liverpool, as you could probably tell, and some of the best advice I've had recently was to get a boat. I think, you know, have it moored down the bottom of the garden. Even if you're living in the Midlands, it might come in useful. And another just about the basics of the electricity and the gas and this birth bond and what have you. There are many different ways of looking at all of this, but it does seem that one way or the other, in means that are not yet entirely clear, but all of this stuff becomes clear over time, that somehow, in some sense, absolutely everything that we have, everything that we use, everything that, you know, we need, is already paid for. And that this appears to be some kind of legislative fact, as well as just, you know, a sacred fact that we're obviously entitled to be warm and dry and fed, because we are the wealth of the nation. So in many, many senses, this electricity is almost certainly free and has already been paid for, and the request to the straw man to pay is merely an attempt to get the money out again. I know there's people working hard on making clear that this is the case. So there is, you know, however we feel about what Dave's doing with his meters and what have you, there might well be, and I personally believe there is, you know, questionable need to pay for it in the first place. We, in times gone by, our governments ran the post office and the gas and the electricity and the water and the telephones, all of that, and they were taxing our butts off then, and they've sold all of that, and now they're taxing our butts off even more. And so whether we should any of us be paying for the electricity, like I say, everybody, it can be absolutely free now to go and look into this. They've seen what can be done. I also know that I know of many people who've had their electricity meters removed and had a replacement meter put in, and it appears that what you're paying for is not the juice that comes through it, but for the meter itself. So if you have a suitably assured and safety certificated meter put in, then you don't have to pay for your electricity because it's your meter. I think Mr. C also put a comment into the chat box saying that that actually, so long as you can get your gas meter properly certificated, it's pretty much true that many gas fitters, like many electricians, can put in gas meters. I guess in law they're almost certainly the same sort of thing. So that was a quick run through what Dave was talking about. I hope that was helpful. It was just my thoughts. I'd like to have had Dave on to talk about it, obviously, but he's otherwise engaged tonight. But I'd still send out a big thanks to him. One of the things that we really should take into account when listening to these sort of things is the kind of warrior spirit that's necessary to stand your ground, to be consistently attentive to detail when, you know, maybe people are trying to distract you and point you in another direction and all the rest of it. It's an amazingly difficult thing to do, and we were making light of it. We were having a good laugh. Dave's like that. And that is the best bit of doing these things, is that when you can relax and look at it and sort of see how it went, then that's really, really good fun. But it's really, I can't overstate how hard it is to do that sort of thing, and how we really, really, I am personally very, very grateful to Dave for coming on and telling his story and letting us hear how it was that he did that. And I think that what I'm probably going to do now is play another couple of tunes, and then we'll listen to a little podcast I've got from Litmus and hear from another free man, a man behaving in his own way and doing his own thing, but he's managed to legitimise the whole shooting match, which I think is really quite clever. So here's another little bit of music. I'll be back with you shortly. You are, of course, listening to Nick M on Dr. Rock's radio show on tnsradio.com. There we go, The Mutant Blues by the Fink Brothers there. This is Dr. Rock's radio show on tnsradio.com, and I'm now going to play a little recording I made 2 or 3 weeks back at the Sunrise celebration of a short conversation I had with Litmus. He was in England from France, where he's hanging out at the moment, and he was doing a couple of presentations at the Sunrise in the Avalon Rising Arena, which is where I was helping out. And I got this opportunity afterwards to have a quick talk with him. He's got a fantastic website called projectfreeman.com, and his entire approach was to take a fairly sane and practical, pragmatic look at the Freeman movement, at the Freeman hypothesis, as he called it, and to see whether it was likely to be true. And his idea was that if it did look like it was likely to be true, then he might spend a bit of time working out how he could implement it and make it work to his advantage, and then he might spend a little bit more time making it work to his advantage, which is exactly what Litmus did. And so he's now successfully deregistered his vehicle, and he's got plates on it which say no tax for war. And he still has, I think he still has an MOT and insurance for it, but he pays as little tax as he can possibly get away with. He explains in detail at projectfreeman.com how to do it, bit by bit, very, very clear, not a lot of words, plenty of pictures, and the whole thing changes from yellow to green as you move through it, so you can very usefully see where you've been as it all happens to you. But here he is. Litmus is a little quiet. My voice is louder than his, so you might have to strain your hearing a little bit, but it's difficult for me to turn him up without turning me up too, and you don't want me shouting in your ears, do you?
Dr. Rock's radio show on tnsradio.ning.com, and I'm at the Sunrise Celebration 2011, and I'm lucky enough to have a Freeman with me, a specific Freeman called Litmus. Hiya, Litmus.
How are you doing, Nick?
Very well, thank you, Beatty. I saw a brilliant talk you did yesterday, just summing up your progress so far in the Freeman move, and I'd like very much if you could sum up just quickly the sort of your approach to getting to the stage you're at now.
Yeah, sure. I'm a bit of a gamekeeper turned poacher, you know, if you like, because I did sort of 24 years in the energy industry, and I did lots of things like sales, marketing. I'm a qualified electrical engineer, actually. I did business strategy and sustainable development. And one of my roles while I was a manager in that industry, was a project manager. And having left that and become a musician full-time and been on lots of peace protest demonstrations against the war and stuff, and nothing ever getting taken notice of, I came across the Freeman stuff in late 2008. And I didn't really believe it to start with. I was quite sceptical.
You were already effectively trying to live a free lifestyle then, before you came across the material.
Well, I got out of employment, which is good, because that That is, if you look at the definition, means to be kept busy and occupied.
Yes.
And of course, while you're busy, work for someone else, usually the man, you don't have time to do any research or anything like that. And you hear about these ideas, but I've got to get up for work in the morning, you know, you just don't get around to looking at it. Once I became self-employed as a musician, I was still pretty busy.
Yeah.
But it meant I could choose how I wanted to use my time.
Yeah.
And if I didn't want to get up, I mean, I made a pact when I set up my business never to work on a Monday.
Same thing. I try not to work Mondays too.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
So you don't get that Sunday night feeling.
Right.
Like you used to get when you were a kid, you know, when you had to go to school again the next day. So, so anyway, I started basically, I didn't believe it that much, and I was a bit sceptical, and I thought, well, what? If I was at work, I would set up a project to check it all out with independent research, you know, and have a project team and test it with real-life examples and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that's what I did. So I registered the domain name, projectfreeman.com, and, I did a project plan, and, I did it all left-brain, because ultimately I'd like a lot of this to appeal to the corporate types who are still in suits and working in offices. And they like to see slides, you know, and graphs and charts and numbers and things.
Yeah, so it's very, very credible, I must admit.
Well, yeah. Supporting information, you know, because what I found was, once I started to research the whole Freeman on the Land concept, there was just so much material, and it was, you know, you typically look at an 80-page document that someone had written, and it's just text. It's just block after block of text. There's not even any headings. Or, you know, you have to wade. I mean, I had to wade through a lot of stuff just to find the little nuggets of gold, you know, of truth.
Yeah.
So I thought, what I need to try and do for people is present this, you know, kind of filter it all down and present the main points with support and evidence from the law books and that I found, so that people can, you know, get a cup of coffee or a beer or whatever, and just sit down on the website and look through the slides one at a time at their own pace, and, you know, let it sink in, assimilate it, go and check it out themselves, come back, read a bit more. But, you know, they don't have to wade, because you the thought for most people of wading through an 80-page document without much punctuation is not a happy thought, you know, and it puts people off.
Then you don't remember very much of it either.
That's right, you don't. And you have to make lots of notes, so I've tried to do that.
Well, I must admit, I've my first encounter with you was via your music, really, which really I found very attractive and lovely to sing along to.
Good.
And that obviously led me to your website.
Hey! I almost forgot, it's Aurora Wedding today!
Is it?
Really, we have a little visitor. We have we have Trinity in visiting the tent. We're recording a little interview here with Litmus. We are. So you might, unless I edit you out, you might be on the radio.
Ooh. Ooh. You want to be on the radio?
Yeah.
Okay, can we finish this and then see you in a little while? Yeah? Mm-hmm. Okay, darling.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thanks for calling by.
Oh, my sister has got one of those.
Yeah?
The best friend has one, and she has the other.
Excellent. Okay, well, I'll see you in a minute.
See you in a bit, Trinity.
Bye-bye, darling. Bye.
So, the music, really. And then I went to your website and saw your Freeman stuff, and that's why I don't think we need to spend too much time on that here, because if people do go to projectfreeman.com, they can follow the process as I did, and it has come out, I must admit, exactly, I feel, as you intended, that it is complex information set out in a really, really understandable order. Everything's clear, there's lots of pictures and very few words, and also I understand that the guys in suits want to see charts and things, but it is a useful way for us to see data. So I'd like to just take it that you have done it. You've deregistered the car. You've managed to basically assume your legal fiction when it's useful for you so to do.
That's right.
And you de-assume it when it's not useful, so it's a bit like a coat for you, really.
Yeah.
Put it on when the weather turns bad, take it off when the weather's good.
Yeah, it's your choice as a free individual. Yeah.
And you found in this process, you appear to have found, although you were naturally, as all of us, a little bit distrusting it to start with, it turned out basically to be pretty true, didn't it? 85-90%.
Yeah, I kind of put a rough number of sort of 86% on it from what, just putting ticks against the things that I found did check out. That's right. And crosses against the ones that
That's
didn't.
It. And the major things checked out sort of 10 out of 10, really,
yeah,
didn't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, the main things like the person, absolutely 100%, no doubt about
And the
that.
Money.
Yeah, all of that stuff. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, basically phase one of the project was saying, well, what is this concept? Summarise that, and then let's go and research it. So all of phase one is the evaluation stage, and that's all on the website, so you can go through it in little chunks. Like, there's a bit about name and title, there's a bit about the person, there's a bit about countries as corporations, and so on. So you can do it in little bite-sized chunks.
I must emphasise here that you really have got, as you describe them, little nuggets, done the work to kind of, if you like, filter out the stuff that really needs to
Hopefully,
be seen.
Hopefully, that's what I've aimed to do, yeah.
So we'll just take it as read that you've done it, and that people can go to the website and see how you did it.
Yeah.
Also, I think the people that were filming you last night, there will be CDs available from, or DVDs available from here of your presentation as well.
Yeah,
so people want to see you live, oh, they can get that as well. So, but what I'd like to do is, because you're one of the first genuine ones that's made it out, if you like, out of the pod, I'd like to know what it's like, you know, how's it changed for you?
Oh, it's fantastic. I mean, it's a journey, isn't it, you know? You start off, I mean, it's not that long ago, you know, 2004, I was still in the energy industry, and, I mean, I had ditched the tie and the suit by then, you know, I was one of the first ones to get rid of that and go through the whole rebellion of not wearing a tie to work, you know, wow.
To start.
But even that, you know, at the time.
It cuts your head off from your body and points at your nuts,
exactly,
mate.
Exactly, you don't want that. It's a noose around, isn't it?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, so having gone from that to being self-employed, and really what it's all about for me is listening to your little voice and following your true path, you know. I believe we all come here with a natural talent. And it's the thing that we can do without being shown, it comes natural, and when we do it, we live in the moment. You know, we're fulfilling our heavenly mandate, or whatever you want to call it. But I think that's what we're all here to do, and the system distracts us from that, takes us away from that, and puts us in these chains called employment, and you know, and makes us work to pay tax and debt and all the rest of it. So getting free from all that has been a journey, and then because of the project and because of what I found out about how the system works, it's really shown me that life is really, really basically simple, very simple. So I'm now living in my camper van on the road in Europe.
Have you deregistered the camper van?
Yeah, I've deregistered the van. I've served notice, so I don't pay income tax. I don't pay council tax. I don't pay parking tickets. You know, I try not to give the system any money.
Yeah.
VAT is obviously an issue, but you know, I'm looking at living in Gibraltar this winter because they don't pay VAT.
Right. Yes.
So I could then tick all the boxes. I'm not giving any money for tax on water.
No. And of course, the one way of getting around the, or the best way of, the only way of getting around the VAT, such as we can, is to trade with each other privately.
Yeah.
Because a lot
and
of private
home brew and stuff like that.
Yeah. A lot of private deals are no income tax, no VAT.
Exactly. I mean, what I've been doing is, you know, living pretty much off my busking. So I travel around, and when I get to a new town, I find out when the market's on, and then I go and busk at the market. And if you do that a couple of times, you get to know all the traders.
Yeah.
And the traders can get a bit bored every week doing the same market in the same place and seeing the same people. And if you turn up and play them some songs, it's like, they told me it's like the holidays have come early. That's what they said to me. You've brought the holidays with you. And they'll give you like hunks of bread and hunks of cheese. And you know, most markets I played, I'd go back to the van with two bags of shopping, you know. And no money has changed hands.
People are fundamentally decent.
They totally are. 99% of the people I meet are good people.
And money is fundamentally unnecessary.
It is, exactly.
Yeah.
So, yeah, bartering, obviously, is the best way. You know, I play you a song, you give me a bowl of porridge, and everyone's happy.
Yeah, very good. So, and I was interested as well that, obviously, people, you got asked a lot of questions about passports last night. Very interesting question to people living on an island like we do here.
Yeah. Well, when you go away and come back, you really see it for what it is, you know, this island mentality.
Yeah, well, you said you only needed to use your passport for?
Coming in and out of the UK. That's the only time.
Yeah. Otherwise,
Never, it's in the pocket or in the van the rest of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't need it. There's a thing called the Schengen zone, which is a borderless travel zone within Europe. There's a double-edged sword to that, because whilst they brought down the borders and made it easy to travel without showing papers. The individual legislation within each territory has been amended so that officially you're not allowed to stay there more than a month.
Right, and that time's been shortened, you say?
Well, it used to be 3 months.
Right, I see.
For example, in France, now it's going down to a month. So.
Do we think we might be seeing the application of the ratchet here again?
Well, who knows, but I mean, the point is, if you're travelling, someone's got to stop you and challenge you, and they've got to prove that you have been there as long as they say that you have. So
that's true.
I have not found it to be a problem at all. And the only, as I say, I had to swallow my principles this time and fly back, because I made a kind of promise to myself not to fly anymore.
Yes.
Because of all the bullshit, if I can say that.
Yes, you can say bullshit, yes. Might as well be honest.
Yeah. And I mean, I really noticed this time, coming back, flying back in to Stansted, and coming up to the UK border, you know, these big signs with big letters, and you shall not do this, and you will be prosecuted if you do, you know, it's really intimidating.
Yeah.
Horrible. And everyone's lined up like sheep going into the pen.
Yeah,
you know?
I can't do it anymore, I must admit, for the same reason last time I went, the time before last when I went to Spain, I could not take the airport. It's not fear of flying or objection to that, although I do object to that. Mm-hmm. But the actual airport, I saw no reason why I should put myself through that.
This was my view, yeah.
So I travelled by bus to Spain, I did, which cost me 180 quid or something. To do a return trip to the south of Spain,
yeah,
as opposed to €75 return on the aeroplane.
Oh, I mean, it was crazy. I didn't have enough money to drive back and forth and go on the ferry in the van, which is what I would have liked to do.
Yeah,
I mean, it was 46 quid return flight versus plus airport transfer, it's still about €90 altogether to fly, and it would have been over 400 to travel. And how can that be right? Mm. I mean, how can it cost less to fly than to drive?
Yeah.
It makes no sense.
Yeah, or be on a bus, I agree.
But we all know it's because the airline companies are heavily subsidised, but they don't pay tax on the fuel and that kind of thing to keep all the prices up. Because the system wants people to be herded through the ports like cattle.
The more they move, the more we know where they are, for a start.
Can be tracked.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, if you're driving, once you get off the ferry in Europe, you can go anywhere and they don't know where you are.
So how do the plates, you know, your no tax for war registration plates, how do they work in
Well, I put those in the windows.
Yeah.
So I didn't see any point in actually putting them on.
No, but they are the only registration mark on the car, do you have...
The original plates are still on there.
Still on it, okay.
Yeah, because I gave notice to the DVLA under the old registration, and I said that the new one, no tax for war, would be displayed.
Yeah.
In the private conveyance.
Okay. So you keep the old ones on.
Yeah, because if you, again, there's no point making work for yourself.
No.
If you, we know that the statutes only apply to the registered person and the member of society. But whilst you're travelling in that jurisdiction, if you don't want a lot of hassle, I mean, if you read the legislation, a copper will feel he has the right, because it says in a statute that if you tamper in any way with the registration mark of the vehicle, it's a standard, like, level one on the standard scale fine.
Okay, okay.
So it's £1,000 fine.
Yeah. So effectively you're asking for a query.
Yeah, you're asking to be pulled over, stopped, given a ticket, which you then have to discharge and send notices and all that. And I thought, well, the main point for me is I want people to see this sign saying no tax for war, so that when they see it, they think, what does that mean? And why has he got it? And it makes them start to make them think.
Yeah.
So I don't mind if it's on the vehicle or in the window or on the roof. Or
as long as it's there.
As long as it's there.
Well, it's been pretty much with you. I haven't got it with you now, but it's been with you everywhere I've seen you this weekend.
I've carried it everywhere. It's on all the videos, hopefully. Yeah. And I just put it back in the car last night.
And you're presumably having a bit of a look at French law now, are you? Because having sussed this jurisdiction, you've moved yourself out of it.
Yeah,
is this for a new challenge?
Well, you know, I'm one of these kind of guys, I like to kind of get a feel across, how can I explain it? I don't like to go too deep into one issue. I like to get a broad understanding of all the issues.
Yeah.
And I leave it to other people to drill down individually into an area or another.
That's pretty reasonable, isn't it? Because otherwise you're just replacing one set of obsessions with another set.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, people like Simon the Spaniard, he's obviously gone into massive depth on the whole commercial redemption and comic side of
yes.
the law. And I don't pretend to have gone into that level of detail. But
we'll be talking with him later, folks.
Yeah, well, listen out, meeting stuff. Great, yeah. great stuff. But, you know, yeah, so I'm trying to... I'm basically doing enough to get myself free.
Yeah.
And pass on that to other people yeah. so they can do it if they wish.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I've been looking at France. I feel I've got enough knowledge of the UK system to... I don't really feel I need to know much more, you know what I mean? To be able to live freely.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm now looking at, because I've spent a lot of time in France, I'm now looking at the French law, and obviously they haven't got the common law to fall back on there. They've only got the civil law statutes-based system. But just one example, they tried to bring in some new legislation called LOPC2. It's an abbreviation for a French term, but it's basically their version of the Homeland Security Act in the States. So it's all about restricting freedoms, internet censorship, surveillance, and you know anti-terror laws and all of this kind of thing. Now, one of the clauses in there was going to be to restrict traveling people living in groups on the land, and it gave the local authorities the right to go in and burn their property and fine. Basically, if the authorities found the local mayor was allowing people to live in near his village, he would be fined $3,500.
And the people would have their property burnt down.
He'd have it all burnt down.
And you were using the conditional there, you were suggesting that didn't come off?
Yeah, there were a lot of demos about that. I went on one in Toulouse earlier this year, where a load of people in campervans and trucks all drove through the city, blowing the horns and
yeah.
all that kind of thing. And that went on all over France. There was quite a lot of...
They do demonstrate enough to make a difference there, and their government seems to take some notice of protests.
Well, they've got a different constitutional structure, haven't they? You know, they're not a constitutional monarchy; they're a republic. They're on the fifth republic now, so they've had since the first revolution, they've had five goes of it,
right.
We're in the fifth one.
So
like
do they?
Son, you know?
So do they still, as a republic, do they actually, if they have a vote, do they require 65% of people to turn out for the vote to count? Because isn't that the definition of a republic?
Possibly. I haven't looked into that
yet.
I'd be
interested to know. Because obviously, one of the main objections we can have to this country is that what you're getting is the majority of a small majority of a very small minority.
Exactly.
And a republic's designed to prevent that from happening.
That's right.
I've often wondered whether that's one of the reasons why France is constantly given a particularly hard time by this government. I've been wondering whether it's the nature of the republic as against the democracy. That's
possibly. Mm. I mean, I have to say, I think the current president, Sarkozy, he's in the G8, and he's in with Obama and Cameron and all the rest of the masses behind the scenes, and I don't see him as any different. But I see him as a bit of an interloper, you know, into what basically is probably a fairly good system.
Yes.
If you look back to how it was started.
Yeah.
So I'm looking at all that now. But the good news was that this clause, the LOPSI thing came in, but it was heavily edited and a lot of these very fascist clauses were taken out because of the protests. And basically what even people in the French Parliament said that this is against the Constitution. So they actually could bring out the Constitution and say, well, this doesn't fit with this. So we can do it.
Yeah. Are you aware that there's people in my research and reading into Codex Alimentarius, you know, the restriction of natural herbs and things,
mm-hmm.
we hear that they're actually prosecuting people for growing culinary herbs in France?
Right.
Which might be an interesting place for you to look.
Yeah.
Because I gather that over here it's not been properly implemented. It's been passed, all the statutes have been passed, but they haven't yet started leaning on us. They are now through the Advertising Standards Agency, but in Germany, for example, you have to be a qualified clinician to be able to prescribe homeopathic or herbal remedies.
Really?
Yes. And in France, I gather that, I mean, I'm assuming the people that are being tried for growing herbs have probably made themselves a nuisance in other ways as well. I shouldn't think they're just growing herbs.
Yeah.
Might be an interesting place to look.
I'll have to look into that, yeah.
So, and you were saying, because I know you've got a busy time, you've got to get back to La Belle France.
Yeah.
But I remember you saying that, you know, to finish, that you were almost thinking of getting rid of the camper van now and setting about it on foot.
Yeah, well, as we were saying, it's a journey, you know, and you gradually you know, you start off with a four-bedroom detached house with a double garage full of stuff and a car and a family and a suit and a job and then you end up with a dog and a camper van and a guitar, you know, and it's pretty sweet. And I thought, well, you know, even the camper van, I mean, I've got a picture I show, and it's on my website, and it's a picture of my van in the Corbière Mountains in France, beautiful backdrop, and it says freedom is a camper van. But I'm beginning to see that even a camper van, you know, can restrict you, because you have to buy fuel and you have to maintain it.
And it's recognisable, isn't it?
And it's recognisable. You know, and I've thought maybe the next step is to just get the dog and maybe the bike and cycle and stay in hostels and or camp.
Do you know, there's some
maybe just walk the earth like Kane in Kung Fu, you know.
Brilliant. Brilliant. There's some guys I gather doing it now here. Hopefully we'll see them later in the weekend. I gather that commonly called Dom and some of his friends who were hoping, I think they were planning on setting up a kind of Freeman establishment of some sort, but unsurprisingly I think it's being made very difficult. So I believe they're calling themselves the English Nomads now, and they're moving from place to place. And you know, if they turn up on a farmer's land, then they offer to help the farmer in exchange for being able to stay there for a bit. So I guess it's partly, isn't it, as we move on as well, we get the chance to educate more people that we meet.
And I thought, wouldn't it be great to just walk from the south of France to Gibraltar? Just do a few miles each day. See how long it takes.
And all you need is a bowl of rice and a roof over your head.
Exactly. Life, that's what where you get to with all this. Life is so simple, you know. It's like the old Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you know. And basically, as long as you got shelter and food and water,
to which we have inalienable right. We have an inalienable right to those things.
You don't really need a lot else.
No.
And if you look back at how people used to live, you know, the day revolved around, right, we'll have a meal, and then we'll maybe grow some crops and clear up a bit, and then we'll have another meal, you know, and the day revolves around just living and enjoying it, you know, not doing all these other things to pay someone else to do everything.
Yeah, I gather that Merry England used to be called Merry England because of the number of holidays it had. It used to be, you know, half of the year off preparing for this one and then recovering from it. And now what have we got? We've got 25 days plus your bank holidays if you're lucky in England.
Well, that's right. And you don't really realise until you're out of it how much of a slave you are, you know, when you're in that employed system.
I'd agree with that entirely, because I quite enjoyed my employed jobs.
Me too.
And organised, because you kind of feel, well, I think this is one of the secrets, isn't it, is that you become fascinated by the thing that you put your attention on, whether it's a job or not a job. But I'd agree with you entirely, the freedom to, you know, be in places like this, talking like this, be really hard if we were both still, you know, enslaved. So, but if you are still enslaved, I would bring to your attention Truth Juice Dave's comments that PAYE is voluntary. You can go to your employer and request that he lets you out of it, and you sort it out at the end of the year.
That's right.
And of course, one of the biggest advantages of becoming self-employed is taking control of that aspect, isn't
it? Definitely, and then you can make sure you're not paying tax for war.
Yeah, which is the basic point, is it not? All of this, or nearly all of our tax, goes into this general consolidated fund.
It does, yeah.
And it's used, you say, 60% of your tax, is it?
Pretty much, yeah. If you look at the latest figures, they take $158 billion in income tax, and they spend $40 billion on military expenditure, which they call the Ministry of Defence, which, of course,
the Ministry of Attack.
Ministry of Aggression, yeah. $40 billion on that, and the interest on the debt now is $50 billion a year. So $90 billion out of 158, nearly 60% of your income tax goes just on killing people and paying interest to the banks for the debt. And it's not even our debt, it's a public debt. Anything public in the law is royal.
Yes.
It's Her Majesty's debt, it's the Crown's debt, it's not ours.
And of course, as Mike Montagna says, the debt is unavoidable. The debt is inherent, inbuilt, and therefore terminal. So any personal failure is due to the failure of the macro system. So if nothing else, you really get, I really get the joy of not putting that money into those things. And of course, there's the added, as we know, the spiritual, the vibrational effect of you wanting to do that and successfully enacting it. Well, the only other thing I'd like to say, how long has it been since you came and did a talk in England last?
I've done a few little ones, but I mean, it was this this time last year.
This time last year.
I did the first 3 day workshops at Sunrise.
And have you noticed the difference in the quality of understanding or the knowledge actually held by your audiences? I was pretty surprised last night.
Yeah, I mean, last year I did sort of phase one, phase two, phase three over 3 days. And yeah, the first day, pretty much everyone there was pretty new to this kind of thing. And I didn't want to run through all that again unnecessarily, so I asked at the start of the talk last night, you know, how many people are aware of this stuff? And nearly, you know, all the hands went up.
Yeah.
So I didn't really need to cover that in as much detail. So there's obviously a growing awareness.
Yeah, everybody in the tent was aware of the legal fiction,
yeah,
and most of the basic stuff. Yeah.
So it's obviously all, you know, mushrooming.
Very good.
Long may it continue.
Long may it continue indeed. And long may you continue to stride the earth spreading the word, mate.
Thank you, mate. So, I'll do my best.
Thank you very much for coming and having a chat with me.
Just live your truth, you know.
Yeah, yeah. That's Joseph Campbell's advice as well. He says, follow your bliss and doors will open for you that you were not aware were there, and doors will open for you that would not be available to anybody else.
I've got to say, that's what I found, you know, when you listen to your little voice, and people call it all sorts of different things, your spirit guide or your angels or whatever it is, I call it my little voice, or some people call it God, but if you listen to that and follow it, everything just falls into place, and it's easy, you know, you get just what you need. You don't get a lot, you get just what you need.
Absolutely.
Marvellous. That was Litmus there, talking about being a Freeman, and that was my dodgy connection again. That's very good. But it seems that my work here is almost done, so I shall play out with Litmus, because it looks like the technology is just going to crackle out on me otherwise. So thanks very much for listening to Dr. Rock's radio show on tnsradio.com. I'd like to put a shout out as well to Scottish Sovereigns on the Land, .ning.com. In the meantime, this is Litmus, one more for you.
That's not my name, I'm not your slave. I live by tomorrow, Lord, that's how I'll behave. With love and respect for my fellow man. Now I remind those of your kind, your statutes never can control the freeborn with their rules and their demands. But I will not stand under what I do not understand. 'Cause I'm a free man on the land. And I'm doing everything I can. Though I may travel by the sea, I will not pour its contract for your power. You're overruled as freeborn till they're finally breaking free. My birth was registered, but my parents never meant me to work my life for you when I do not consent. 'Cause I'm a free man on the land. Your phony money, your twisted tongues, the corporate corruption of your cities fills my lungs and seas.